Chapter 18. The Reluctant God. Many years ago, during the Great Crusade, Sanguinius. He went alone. No army of faithful followers marched at his back. No ceremony marked any stage of his journey. He went into the desert alone, inured to the hardships of the wasteland in a way no mortal could ever hope to be. And like all moments such as these, few and far between as they were, later there would be stories. This journey, and the meeting at its end, would be refracted into a spillage of variant tales, some of which held an authentic core, far more of which were lies, destined to become enshrined as truth. The Revenant Legion would hear many of these tales, filed down and muddled by their own guarded, uneasy hope. They had nothing else to rely on. Word would reach them through brief exchanges between expeditionary fleets in the deep void and across shrieking astropathic ducts, the impressions of half-mad psychic men and women channeling their senses into the unreliable warp. For a time, all the Revenant Legion would have were stories of transcendent choirs and cheering crowds, a scene they could all too easily believe, and one that sank unpleasantly into the silt of their troubled hearts. But the truth, if such a thing really matters when it's always the lies that spread instead, is that he went alone. It was his choice to do so. He had questions to ask, though he feared the answers he'd receive, and he had a bargain to strike, upon which there would be no compromise. Sanguinius had never seen a spaceship before, not outside the fractal impressions of them that sailed in his waking dreams. This one, sitting on the desert plain with its golden armour baking in the sun, had the suggestion of vulturishness. It was a thing of power and efficiency, blunt and brutal. Fire made it fly, not any notion of grace. Figures clustered around the craft's landing legs, where the ship's great metal claws gripped the radiation-soaked dust of the wasteland. These men and women were plated in the same gold as the ship, rendered upon their bodies with painstaking artistry. "My father's guardians," Sanguinius thought. And what a thought it was! Not only that a being such as his father required guardians, but that he had a father at all. All the years of wondering at his own heritage, devoid of insight into his origins, and here, at last, was the truth, standing in the shadow of a vessel from the void. He leaned into the desert wind, stretching his muscles and rising on a thermal of bitter breeze. The temptation was there, like it always was, to soar, to break free of the ground and his responsibilities, taking to the sky and seeking distant lands where the secrets of old wars lay buried. Today that urge was both stronger and weaker. His heart was ill at ease with what this meeting would mean, but nevertheless he burned to know what lay ahead. He arced groundward, landing lightly with a scuff of his boots across the earth and a final furling of his wings. Dust swirled around his shins as he stepped forward. The golden figures carried weapons, a panoply of axes and spears and hard-caliber firearms. Sanguinius carried only his sword, undrawn, riding low on his hip. "Welcome to Balfora, outlanders." He spoke Enochian, the tongue of his people, the pure. He wondered if the outlanders would understand him, or whether they would be forced to rely on hand gestures and awkward mimicry.
"My son," said one of the Golden Ones, somehow speaking it silently.
He felt his father's voice for the first time as one of his own thoughts, a sensation rather than speech, backed by a tremendous feeling of suppressed force. The Golden Man, if he was a man, that sent the contact, seemed to be making significant efforts to restrain himself or to contain the power within himself. There was more there, though.
My son rhymed with my weapon, and rhymed with the ninth, and rhymed with other concepts that Sanguinius couldn't pass from the core of the man's meaning. A lifetime of perspective was bound up in that contact, and Sanguinius sensed only the gulf between his father's silent words and the meaning behind them. But he felt no threat in the touch of mind upon mind. Confidence, impatience, love, caution, approximations of those where words couldn't quite convey the actuality. It was all in there. The man, and he did seem like a man, dark of skin and hair, smelling of metal and sweat, in possession of a heartbeat, walked closer.
"I am the Emperor," the man said as he stepped out from the spacecraft's shadow. "And I am your father."
"Father," the man had said, the word rhyming in silence with master, with shaper, with creator. Sanguinius met the Emperor's eyes. What he saw there, glinting in the light of his father's gaze, was the answer to a question he'd never even considered. This being, this Emperor, was human. But he was not exactly a man.
"I see the light of many souls in your eyes. Many men, many women."
The Emperor smiled. "Is that what you see?" He spoke flawless Enochian, but that perfection was itself a flaw. He spoke the tongue with the same dialect and inflection as Sanguinius himself. Either the Emperor was pulling the meaning from the angel's mind or imprinting meaning upon it. Whichever was true, he wasn't really speaking the language at all. Nor was Sanguinius entirely certain he could see the man's mouth move.
"I have sought you for many years," said the Emperor.
And behind those words, Sanguinius sensed the cheering of crowds and the burning of worlds. His blood ran cold in the desert heat.
"I've seen shades of this meeting many times in my dreams," Sanguinius confessed.
A heavier gust blew from the east. He instinctively lifted a wing to shield himself from the gritty air. The Emperor's eyes followed the movement. He began to circle Sanguinius in a slow walk, one gauntleted hand reaching out, fingertips running down the angel's feathers. Sanguinius's pale gaze tracked his circling father, but his wings rippled with discomfort each time the Emperor moved behind him out of sight.
"You are uneasy," said the Emperor. "That is natural, my son. I have come not only to liberate you from exile, but to ease your heart and mind with all you need to know."
Sanguinius felt a lifetime of questions trapped on his tongue. There was one, however, that was always going to break free first. One question above all others had plagued him and haunted his people since the tribe of pure blood had discovered him in the wildlands. They worshipped him for his strength and beneficence, but they feared him for the question that now lay unspoken between father and son.
"Ask," said the Emperor. "Ask the question I sense lying upon your tongue."
The angel pulled back from his father, not furling his wings, but spreading them. With sudden passion, he beat a fist against the animal hide of his breastplate. A lone feather, swan-white, drifted in an arcing dance down to the dusty earth.
"What am I?"
"You are my son," said the Emperor.
And again meanings and concepts danced beneath those words. "You are my son," was overlaid by "you are a Primarch," and "you are my ninth general," and "you are a component of the great work," and "you were stolen by the enemy," and, most unsettling of all, "you may have been changed by them."
"I don't know what you mean."
"You will," the Emperor assured him.
"You are the death of faith," Sanguinius replied. "That I know."
The Emperor regarded him before speaking.
"Yes," his father agreed. "And also no." "How do you know of such things?"
"I told you. I have dreamed of this day. Fragments, shadows, suggestions. Sometimes they come to me, fierce with emotion yet raked clean of detail.
Faith is a weapon, said the Emperor. A weapon that the species cannot be trusted to wield.
My people revere me as their god, Sanguinius replied. That brings them a measure of peace. No doubt to you and your sky-sailing kind, we are nothing but primitives, roaches in this poisoned desert. But I reward their faith in me. I am their servant. I am mercy when my people need it most, and I am death to their enemies.
That does not make you a god, my son.
I never said I was a god. I said my people believe me to be one.
Sanguinius stared into his father's inhuman, too human eyes.
My people, the pure, are to be left in peace. Whatever pacts you and I swear this day, my inviolate condition is this. No ship will enter Balfora's heavens without my mandate, and no interference will be permitted to the clans of pure blood without my permission. We have carved out the solace of peace here together. You will not threaten it, Father.
The Emperor nodded, not in agreement, but in sudden understanding. That is why you fear me, is it not? You fear the endangerment of what you have achieved here.
I speak of loyalty and love, the angel said gently. And you speak of achievement.
Am I wrong? Asked the Emperor.
I fear for the lives of my people who deserve only peace. A peace we have fought so hard for. Behind your words, I hear the triumph of cultures that see you as their savior. But I also hear the razing of cities and the burning of worlds. I hear the dirges of faiths now forbidden, and the mourning of those nations that followed them.
Am I wrong? The Emperor said nothing.
Later, many times over the decades to come, Sanguinius would think back on those words. For all the purity of the Emperor's intent, there were so many compromises. Faith could not be tolerated, except for when it could. Religions were drowned in the ashes of defiant worlds, except when their usefulness aligned with the great work. The Emperor needed the Martian Mechanicum, and he allowed them to worship him as the Omnissiah, the incarnated avatar of the machine god. Perhaps necessity carves holes in everyone's principles, human and god alike. But all of this would come later. There on the desert sands that day, the angel had more questions.
You keep looking at my wings. Wings, I note, that you and your followers do not possess.
Sanguinius scanned the men and women still waiting by the landing craft, then looked to the Emperor once more.
Do I bear these by your design, or by some twist of misfortune?
The Emperor looked at him with the keen eye of an inventor assessing a prototype, as well as the forgiving gaze of a father, a seamless blend.
You are exquisitely wrought, said the Emperor. Exquisitely and painstakingly. Which was no answer at all.
What am I?
Sanguinius asked again, this time with an edge to his tone. The Emperor's voice softened, as did his expression. Only his eyes were unchanged, remaining lit by inseparable, uncountable souls.
You are a gamble against the death of hope, my son. You are a roll of the dice at the end of the game. What do you call yourself?
He called himself by the names his people had given him. First, the nicknames of youth, then the name he'd received as he grew to lead the clans of pure blood, a name sacred to the tribe that had come to view him as their god, a name that marked him as theirs in spirit, if not in birth, meaning of the pure blood.
Sanguinius.
The Emperor nodded.
Sanguinius.
You are a Primarch, a component of the great work, stolen from me and torn from its place,
denied to me all these years. I have need of you, my son. Humanity has need of you. You are instrumental to the species' salvation. I have come to lift you from these dry roots, to take you into the stars, to give you a legion to command and a future to fight for. Once more, Sanguinius heard the adulations of crowds in bright sunlight and the cries of populations on burning worlds. He asked then what no other Primarch had given voice to. Even Angron, upon his discovery, would act without asking the question Sanguinius now asked.
What if I refuse?
The Emperor seemed to weigh this. You will not refuse. I know your soul. Here you've saved tens of thousands of lives. With me, you will save billions of lives on millions of worlds. You'll save the life of every human yet to be born. That is not something you could turn your back on. They stared into each other's eyes, father and son, creator and created. Neither argued against the truth of the Emperor's words.
I want something from you.
I want your oath. The Emperor was silent, allowing his son to continue.
Do you swear, on whatever oaths hold value to you, that you will leave the clans of pure blood in peace, untouched by your designs unless they desire otherwise, free to exist as they already exist, believing whatever they choose to believe?
The Emperor hesitated. Sanguinius saw the calculation in his father's eyes, and he wondered,
is he taken aback by the love I bear for my people, or is he merely considering alternate avenues around this obstacle in his great work?
The Emperor finally spoke. You have my promise. Sanguinius closed his wings.
Then let us speak of the future, Father.
And so they did.